Okay, so we've been talking a lot about in Netiv HaOsher about how a person should relate to physicality and acquiring things and having things. We started off with the pasuk from Shlomo HaMelech, Al tigale ashir mibinatcha chadal. Stop chasing after things, because once you're chasing it, you're never really acquiring it, right? And then we talked about what does that mean to be a person who's not chasing things, not chasing wisdom, not chasing things you acquire? And we spoke about the midah of hestapkut, which is the midah of Avram Avinu, who was mistapik, and he had what he wanted. So the last thing we did, I'm just going to review it, is on the paragraph that starts midah hestapkut, shu sone matanot legamrei, shelo yikabel matana min haadam. So Gemara says Reb Zera, from the Bein Asiya, from the, you know, the governor's house, they would send him gifts and he wouldn't take them, right? And they sent honor chariots to bring him, and he wouldn't go with them. And he said, you don't like that I'm alive? You want me to die? Pasuk says, "Sone matanot yichye." Right? You're giving me all these gifts. Apparently, you're trying to kill me. And we saw before that Avram Avinu, when the kings of Sodom wanted to give him all the treasures, Avram said, "No way. I don't want you to say that you're the reason I'm wealthy." Right? I want to be the reason I'm wealthy. And we spoke a lot about a person who is mistapek mimaseyadav. Right? Person who is happy with the toil of his hands, and not a person who is desiring other stuff. Right? That was one of the things that we spoke about before. I'm just looking for it. Oh yeah, Gia Kapecha Kitochel. So you're enjoying the actions of your own hand. It says like this in Maharal now. Ubiur davar ze ki mi shehu sone matanot lo yeh ze she'eino mekabel ela sonehu akabala. A person who sone matanot is not a person who doesn't like gifts. It's a person who doesn't like receiving. If you're a true person, if you're truly alive, if you're truly in this world integrated, then you don't want things that come virtue of free. You want things that you've worked for and toiled for. You want things that you own and that you've acquired because you've worked and built a relationship with these things. And not because you just found it or because somebody gave it to you. Then you don't have a real relationship with this. I don't know if we spoke about this, but it's worthy to bring it up again about the Gehenom versus Gan Eden, right? That the Gehenom is a Gehinam. It's a valley of freedom. Everything's free in a valley. Just things just kind of wash into it. There's no hard work, right? The famous Mea Shiloach that says that the people of the Tower of Babel really were trying to build Beit HaMikdash, but they did in a valley. Mm. And you have to build it on a mountain. Because a person can find himself in a valley. You can't find yourself at the top of the mountain. You can't be like, oh, tell me something about yourself. Oh, I accidentally climbed Everest. Doesn't happen accidentally. A person who climbs a mountain, he chooses to every moment of the way, and he has to constantly remind himself why he's on it, because every step further is becoming harder and harder. You can't build the house of Hashem in a valley where a person kind of just found himself in a valley. I was just walking, and all of a sudden I'm here in a valley.
Walk into Death Valley?
Yeah.
The Dead Sea?
Exactly.
How? It's so hot.
Okay. Well, that's a different temperature-wise, but you know, but we're talking about just, you kind of find yourself there because you're just walking. And it just a slow decline.
Metaphorically, I think it holds up more, but I agree with you.
And a mountain, the incline forces you to make a choice, right? And therefore, the idea is that a person is getting things for free. He's in the valley, the Gei Chinam, the valley of freedom, the valley of where things just kind of accumulate there because of flash floods and because of stuff and not because of anything that actually meant to get to the top of the mountain, versus Gan Eden, which is a garden where you're intricate, where you're integrated, you're part of this, you grew from within this garden, and where you have this week's parsha talking about the Garden of Eden, right? Something that grows from within. Yeah.
How do we reconcile that with the idea that like Torah is water, and everybody knows that water goes to the lowest point? So how do we, is there
Torah is also water and also fire, and we're two facets of Torah. right? Torah shebichtav is Torah tanigla is water. It goes down even to the lowest person. Torah sod is actually fire. Rabbi Shimon in Meron, we light the fire, right? There's actually a strong value of fire that goes up versus the water that goes down. That's why the Arizal and Rabbi Yosef Kaira are buried right next to each other. Torah Tanigla and Torah Tanistar need each other in order to not destroy each other. But there's a value for Torah that's able to go all the way down, and yet the Beis HaMikdash is not a place of Torah at all. There's no Torah in the Beis HaMikdash, there's only fire. There's fire and fire and fire. Because Beis HaMikdash is about going up, 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 while there's also Lishkata Gazit and Sanhedrin, and they learn Torah and they bring it down. And when the Torah, Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so that's when Torah Shebaal Peh evolved further, right? There's two different paths. But right now, the Maharal is talking about this idea of getting things for free versus becoming part of and joining a joinder of this creation are two antithetical parts. And they're very much contrasted between Yaakov and Esav. Esav, who's the hunter, right? Who always just goes and takes things that he didn't work for, that he didn't grow. And Yaakov, who has the kettle, right? And he's the person who's cooking the food. And he's working. And they're constantly contrasted. Yaakov has to work very hard for his wives. And Esav just takes his wives. And Yaakov is working very hard for the flock, and Esav just goes and hunts him and takes him from the wild, or who knows from who else, from other people, because Chazal say he was full of chamas. And Yaakov works hard for the Bechora, and Esav just took it by coming out first. And that's why when they're met, when they're talked about to Rivka, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'rav Yavod Tzair. The Rav, the one who has always a lot and always wants a lot, a lot, a lot, as he says to Yaakov, Yeshli Ravachi. And Yaakov's answer is what? Yeshli Kol. It's not about accumulating. It's about regarding what you have. And when Yaakov is losing two little jugs on the other side of the river, he goes back for them, because a true person who is working for what he has is very important to him. Because I have a relationship with it. Because I worked to have it, and I acquired it based on importance. In today's world, you know, they always say they don't make things like they used to. Eh? You know, my parents, it's not a joke, I mean, it's true, still have the same fridge they had when they made Aliyah 32 years ago. The same General Electric fridge is still in my parents' house. And only about 5 years ago, or 10 years ago, I would say, the dishwashers had to be switched out, right? And the microwave, like 22, lasted for 25 years. And today, you know, like the milk frother, I took it out, it's wintertime, didn't work. And I said to my wife, look, 2 years, a milk frother, that is a life expectancy. Got to throw it out and spend another $14 on one, unless we want to spend $80 on one, and then maybe we can have it for our grandchildren to froth milk. But by then, probably our milk won't be firm enough, and they'll have to get a new frother because their parents drank chalav, the grandparents drank chalav stam, kofrim. And in a deep way, the Maharal is saying, and Shlomo HaMelech is telling us, stop chasing things. And we just saw this in Kohelet. You chase and chase and chase, and it's never done, because you know what? At the end of the day, even though you've chased forever, your life is ending, and how are you passing this on? Unless it's things you've acquired from within, that you've worked with, right? And this is what I've been saying for years in my tefillos to the New York Knicks management. Stop trying to acquire names. Make names. And you know what? In 10 years of tefillos, pay off. In the third quarter yesterday, gave me a lot of nachas. The fourth quarter, not so much, but the third quarter gave me a lot of nachas. And it was very nice to see these young players who are being bred from within, that you've acquired when they were nothing. And you worked hard to toil with them. And that's what it says. Not about not receiving gifts. And that's what it means to be alive. What it means to be alive is that you're integrated. A person can be in this world and he's dead. He's dead. Who are people that are chashav kemet in Chazal? Three people, do you know? Three people that are chashav kemet. A poor person, because he can't acquire anything, so he has no relationship with anything. He's constantly a receiver. A person who has no children, because who are you integrating with? Who are you passing on? Who are you constantly feeding off of? Right? And a person who has tzarat. Why is a person who has tzarat chashuv kemet? How did he get tzarat? Lashon hara. That means that who wants to talk to him? No one. Right? So you have three levels. One is conversation. Two is acquiring, right? Through finance. And three is sexuality, right? And all those are giving you nothing, so you're getting nothing, so you're not alive. Which, for those who are still remembering what we learn in the roots of love, that is exactly what makes man, v'yi adam l'nefesh chaya, that he has these interactions. He is alive because he's able to have deya and dibur and interact. But if you live in a world of no interactions, and it's interesting, the more people have money, the less they're alive. The more they need drugs and women and more things to make them feel alive, because everything they have is not making them feel alive, because as Shlomo HaMelech says, Al tigal ashir mibin et chachadal. Stop chasing. That's never going to give you satisfaction. That financial security that you're waiting for is never coming. So the person like Avram Avinu, who is being passed on to Yaakov Avinu, hates matanot. And when the kings want to give him a matana, his reaction is very hurt. He's not like, no, it's fine. I'm not going to take anything. Not a shoelace that ripped at battle. Because I didn't work for that. Because battle, like Tzai, like Esav, huh. And it's the beginning that Yaakov thinks that Esav is the right guy, because Esav is the Ish Sadeh, the planter, the person who grows. You read the Lamed Tet Melachot, a third of them are just about making bread, right? And then the other is like everything else in life. And you're like, what? Yeah, exactly. Because to make bread, do you know how many processes have to go through? How many processes have to happen in order for you to be able to understand what I'm saying right now? Forget about the billions of microchips that are processing this information so somebody can hear it on the other side of the world later today. And Yitzchak thinks that Yaakov is the Ish Sadeh, but it's only later about that he realized that Vayivaz Ezavet Abechora, that it's actually Re'eh Re'ach B'ni Kereach HaSadeh, that, oh my God, I'm able to see finally what I haven't been able to see. That's actually Yaakov. It's actually the soul that is able to integrate everything in the body in order to move forward. So says the Maharal, it's very simple. A person who wants gifts is a person who's not wanting life. Choosing to work for something is a choice of life. And there's something very degrading about constantly being giving things. And we're going to see that. Especially when we talk about Netivat Tzedakah. How the Gmilut Chasadim, the person who has Chesed, is always Mitbayesh. And Maral brings a Midrash Chazal that the Gimel is chasing after the Dalet, the Gomel Dalim. The Gomel is chasing after the Dalet. The Dalet's running away. His face is looking the other way because he's embarrassed. Very embarrassing to take things. Take away your dignity. Says the Maharal, "Ki ha'mayan shenikra ma'im chayim, mipnei shu noveh me'atzmo." A spring is called ma'im chayim. Why? Because it has its own source of water. It's not a boar. It's not a be'er. It's a ma'im chayim. It's its own source. Ve'ein mekabel mizulato ve'abor asher hu mekabel nikra ein lo nikra ma'im chayim klal. The boar, doesn't receive anything of his own. He's just only gathering outside sources. Right? And therefore the ani is a person who's like a mate. An ani is a person who is not considered alive. That's what the Maharal, when he's going to explore the Netivat Tzedakah, he talks about gemilut chasadim. What does gemila mean? What does ligamel mean? Abraham does a mishte b'yom hi gamel et Yitzchak. And the day Yitzchak is no longer nursing, no longer dependent on other. What is the highest form of tzedakah in Judaism? Tell me. Sure, you know this. Getting somebody a job. Gomel chasadim. Mm-hmm. Making sure a person doesn't need chasadim anymore. That is true gemilas chesed. You're giving somebody a little tzedakah so he has to come back for more later. Tzedakah, that's not gemilas chasadim. Gemilas chasadim is when you put a person on his feet so he doesn't need you anymore. And the Maharal is going to explain that in Netivat Tzedakah. But here he says that a person who's constantly mekabel from another person, he's not nechshav chai. That's why also the countries that have the most welfare are the countries that you have the most people that hate the government the most. right? The people who take from the government the most are the people who hate the government the most, because they take away their dignity. The people who don't need the government's help at all, they actually support the government. But it's those people who are constantly needy that are lacking life. Any person who's a receiver, he's also lacking. And any person who's lacking, you're pointing out his lack, right? I mean, you couldn't have picked up this maral and learned it on your own? Maybe yes, maybe no. And if I constantly emphasize that, well, you need me to give this shir, or else you wouldn't know the maral. You can't learn the maral on your own. Well, that would be degrading and you wouldn't want to come anywhere, right? The job of a Rebbe is not to create dependency, but rather to make you self-sufficient, that you can do this on your own, that you don't need me anymore, that you can be able to develop these ideas without me. A person who wants to be alive is a person who hates gifts, because I want it to work for it. I want it to be mine. I don't want to be a receiver, because a receiver is a person who's lacking. And that's why Yaakov has no problem giving Esav, because yesh li kol, I have all I need. So I'm not losing by giving to you. You have sometimes people who are giving because they need to give, and yet when they give, they want to make sure that you understand that they give, because now they have less, and they want to understand that you know that they have less, right? Maybe I should start that practice. When I take people out to coffee, I'll be like, well, there's $5 less in my budget. That was great. That's not how life works. I mean, there are plenty of people who work that way. But they're not alive. They're constantly chasing the next thing that will give them a sense of feeling until that one fades. Gemara says, Shmuel HaNavi, he brought his house with him. He didn't want people to feel, oh, the rabbi's coming, we have to put him up, we have to take care of him. We have to collect money from everybody to now sponsor the rabbi. No. Shmuel came with his house. And Elisha didn't need anything. The woman said, I want you to be in my house because I want to give to you because you're such a holy person. For you to stay by me is actually honor for me. Mm. Right? When Zusha came down to campus, I think it was last year.
2 years.
2 years ago. 20 people texted me. If they need a room to stay, they could stay by me. Right? Because like, who wouldn't want Shaban to stay in their house? That'd be great, right? Right? So it's not like, oh, we need to put them up. Who's willing to put them up? Right? It's a whole different concept. The tzaddik, when he comes to the town, people want him. But Shlomo Ramati said, I'm not nene. And Elisha, if a person wants to be nene from the tzibur, has to be like Elisha, says, I don't need anything. And someone says, oh, we're not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I want you in my house, because I know what blessing you bring, and we know exactly what happens when Elisha comes into the house and what blessing that brings. Yeah.
Just a second, I was thinking that, first I had a question, but then I think I resolved the question. So the original question was, I think I personally am motivated by the idea that there are certain things that are a struggle, and it's like a challenge, and something that I work for, even if I don't attain it, if there's always like something just out of my reach and I can't really, it's kind of elusive to me, then that's kind of motivating for me to like keep going, to keep trying, to whatever it is, to push myself a little bit more. And so first I thought, well, you know, that's kind of contradictory to what we're saying, because we're saying that you should see what you already have rather than always looking for something else. But I think that I may have answered in my own words, which is that when it's a personal thing, that's different. I don't think we're saying that it's bad to reach for things beyond your grasp and to always kind of be looking ahead at the next thing, as long as that's a self-motivated process. Is that
so? I think
is that consistent with what you're saying?
Yeah, but I think to sharpen that, it's okay to have things as long as you work for them. If you're willing to just put in a little effort so it doesn't seem like it was free, and then somebody else do the rest of the effort, that's not right.
Right.
Wanting things and motivating you to work for them, that is what we're talking about. It's okay to want things as long as you understand that that wanting is an awakening for true work.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Meaning, Reb Tzadok says, based on the Me'ashi Loach, which is obviously where you're pooling this idea of struggle from, is that when there's a gzera in the world, it's because we need to be reminded that we're not doing hard enough work. So when there was a gzera by the Greeks not to learn Torah, you know why that was? That was to awaken us to really want to learn Torah. People are willing to be moser nefesh, right? I mean, how many Jews weren't keeping kosher eating treif? And then when the Nazis tried to feed them treif, they're willing to kill themselves.
Right.
Why? Because once there's a gzera, it awakens something deeper inside of you. Right. So it's okay to want something if it's awakening something healthy. Right? But if you're just constantly chasing something in order to acquire, in order to have it, in order to possess it, then you miss the whole point. Right? The true avodah, Rabbi Nachman would say, is at the end, you feel so fulfilled from the work that you don't even want it anymore.
Right. I was just going to say, do you think there's value in just the process of
100%
of working for something?
That's how Rabbi Nachman understands. That's how Rabbi Nachman understands right. the Mishnah and Pirkei Avot.
Right.
Yagata umatzata ta'amin. What does it mean? You toiled and you found, believe. Should be if you toiled, then you received. No, because when you toiled, you found that the toil was what you were actually right. after.
It's like how responsibility is meaning. People think, or like responsibility is the key to meaning. It's like people think that once you get stuff, then you'll, when you get the answer, then you'll be, you know, satisfied with your existence. But really, it's like the more you work at the things that you think are kind of antithetical to what you would assign meaning to are the things that really are.
Yeah.
That's kind of a tangent, but.
But the question is not what the grade I got in the test,
right.
but the question is how much right. did I work
right.
and find in myself that I have the ability to set my priorities in a way that now I'm actually working hard to do this, right? And I'm training myself and I'm bringing out abilities within me, right? So I remember when I started the Daf Yomi cycle, right, the cycle started 14 years ago. The head of our community got up there, and he said, "I challenge you to prove to yourself you can do it. And I'm going to give you two ground rules. One, never make up a daf. You missed it, don't make it up. And you start making it up, you're just going to keep going. Just whatever the daf yomi is today, do it. Just challenge yourself to say I can do it. And two." It's about the journey, right? And I remember at the end of the cycle, there was like a daf yomi, like see him in our yeshuv, and so many people said, like, it was the encouraging of the Rav to say, like, prove yourself wrong. You're sitting here saying, daf yomi is not for me? It's exactly who I'm talking to. Prove yourself wrong. Do it, right? Not from a idea of like, okay, say, I did it, right? Right, as my Rebbe Refruman used to always say, we finished Shas, now look how great we are. Now we can make a party that we're so amazing, that we're so great. Right? So now it's like we're so glorified. That's not why we do it. We don't do it to say that, you know, oh my, I'm so great. We do it to prove to ourselves we can do it. So there's a great idea, but then like if somebody wants to give it to you for free, right, then you're like, I'm not interested in that. Right? I'm interested in the work. That's the kind of person Shlomo Melech is trying to tell us to be. And he says, Hatam lo haya matana rak sheyye bebeito veya nehena mimenu. When the Nasi was trying to give Rabbi Zera a gift, there's no honor in Rabbi Zera receiving a gift from the Nasi, right? If I get a gift from the president of the United States, there's no honor to the president. He's not going to be like, wow, I gave a donation to the JLIC. Look at it. Nished. But when the Isha said to Elisha, I want you to stay in my house rather than renting a place, the honor is mine. Right? The honor is mine. And is v'she'im ha'itah nitna elav b'matana, zoi titkadesh elav, hu yadam nichshav ki mekudeshet dekevan shehu adam chashuv haya ne'enam b'ma shemekabel minu. B'ma ka mekomot amrina kach, v'kvar b'yarnu ze l'malah b'nativa Torah en sham. Shomer nafsho yirchak mimeno. והכל בוודאי הולך אחר הכוונה אם הוא שונא מתנות רק מכיוון להחשיב הנותן שרי. Person can hate gifts, why? Because he wants to come off as a person who hates gifts. Right? It's like, shishi? Shishi? No. Shishi? No. Shishi? Well, if you're insisting, right? No, it's like, no. I don't want the honor. I didn't work for it, right? If a person, you know, prepared the aliyah and worked hard to know the aliyah, then you should give him an aliyah, right? But in a deep way, the idea is that a person has to shape his perception of what are my relationship with possessions based on things that I acquire because I have a relationship with them. And we know that about animals. Any person who's had a dog growing up. You know, there was a study done about 15 years ago in high school in America, and they asked students, they pooled only students who had a dog, and they asked them, if your dog's drowning in a river or a stranger, who would you save? Who would you save? And overwhelming, almost all students said, my dog. A human being can die, I don't care, he's a stranger. And my dog, right? Now there's a lot to say about that study, whether are we educating well the value of human beings, are we promoting too much importance of animal life, are we, etc., do we devalue humans? But yet, a person who is constantly taking care of an animal, he owns the dog not because he has ownership, but because there's a relationship here.
They also did a study, just very related, on people who fill their prescriptions for their pets versus themselves, and people fill their prescriptions for their pets more than they fill the prescriptions for themselves.
I say what? Because as Rav Dessler says in Strive for Truth,
care of something else.
But when you give to something, you
right.
love it.
Right.
Right? And he says here, אבל מכיוון לענות עצמו בוודאי האדם הזה יוצא מגדר זה, מה שראוי אלא התלמיד חכם, כמו שנדבר למעלה בנתיב התורה, ובפרט בדור הזה, כי מידה הזאת גורמת שמתבזה בשבילה, שבו ריח תורה ודאי בזה הדיבור. When a person is chasing things, a person wants to receive, then he also doesn't want to give. Because he knows how much receiving means. Now, Torah is all about being integrated. Now, it's very interesting because the Maharal opens in Netiva Torah and saying something so awesome. Everybody knows the first Rashi in the Torah, right? What is the first Rashi in the Torah? Why did the Torah start with Bereshit? It could have started with Mitzvos. And then, what does Rashi do? He brings a midrash to say, say what? Oh, the goyim will come and say, we stole the land. God gave it to all the Torah. God gave it to them. God gave the Torah. God gave the land to them. He can take it away from them and give it to us. That's why we start in Bereshis. And everybody asks about Rashi's midrash. But if they don't believe the Torah, so how does it help that?
Right.
But the Maharal says something even greater in the Tiva Torah. Something mind-blowing. What is Rashi doing? Rashi's explaining the Torah. Where do you have the right to explain the Torah from?
Good job.
The story of creation. If God just gave us the Torah, the mitzvos, then what's the answer? God gave you the laws. Who are you to tamper with the laws? But the fact that God started the Torah in our journey and our relationship with creation shows that God wants to be part of the journey. And therefore I can come, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, can come and give my own explanation to what the Torah is saying. Because God started the Torah here in our participating journey in the Torah. And that's why we matter. And when the goyim come and say, you stole the land, you know what our answer is? Are you part of the journey? Because if you're part of the journey, then you have the right to this land just as much as we are. But if you're just coming and saying, we had it first, so what? So you lost it. So what? Right? The point is, are you in the story? or are you a bystander? And who learned that very well? The Muslims, unlike the Christians, when the Muslims can say, we are part of the story. We are the sons of Ishmael. We are part of the story. And that's why they have such a stronghold on the land, unlike the Christians who said, we're not part of the story. We're just the next step in the story. Okay, so if I'm the next step in the story, then go do it somewhere else. Right? But that's Rashi's answer. Right? And that's why in so many of these deep panels between settlers, Arabs, and Israelis, you always hear, like, it's always coming down to, like, who cares about the land more? It has nothing to do with who was here first. That doesn't matter at all in the conversation. Like, how are you burning trees just to evacuate cities? And you'll always hear people on the other side saying, like, we condemn them. Murder, not so much. Burning trees? Okay. It's a deep conversation about are you part of the story or are you not? And this is what's happening. We live in a world where chasing after value is chasing after gifts. See, at the end of the day, give an example. A person goes to Verizon and he gets a new iPhone. How much did he pay for the iPhone? $24. $24. Did he get a gift? Yeah, because the phone is worth more than $24. The phone is probably worth, let's say $80, if we're gonna be honest. The rest is just the branding. But let's say it's worth $80, okay? The new iPhone. You only pay $24. When are you gonna pay the rest? Okay, in the future. So you got a gift. You didn't work for something. You received a gift. And because you received a gift, you know what happened? Who owns who?
They own you.
You don't own the phone. Because you know what happens in the small print? That if you can't make the last payment,
take it back.
The phone is never yours. Right? When I bought my phone, I paid everything up front. I don't want a penny. I want to pay everything up front. I want this. If this is really worth to me the $365 that I paid for the SE on Christmas 2 years ago, then I'm paying for it.
Yeah, right, what's Christmas?
Christmas, as I explain to my children, is when the non-Jewish people are trying to figure out their relationship with beginnings and ends.
What do you mean by that? Just like in two sentences.
What is Christmas? What is that on the date, on the calendar?
Right.
What is it?
Jesus'
birthday.
No. No.
December 25th.
Thank you.
Oh, fine.
Okay, when was Jesus? When was Jesus born?
Easter.
January 1st. That's how the calendar works.
Oh, really?
He was born on January 1st.
It was opposite. I thought he was born on the 25th. His birth was on the 1st.
Well, that the math doesn't right because birth is on 8th day. But let's for a second. That is a girsa. But when was Adam born?
Rosh Hashanah.
So when was the world created?
6 days before that.
On the 25th of. Of Elul, right? Now, if you go to the Safrut Tanaim, and the Tanaim had a special holiday on the 25th of Elul. It's called the holiday of taking upon myself what I'm going to learn for the next year. Okay? The Tanaim had, I would start my cycle on Rosh Hashanah, but on the 25th, on the creation of the world, is when I would set into creation what I am going to do for the next year. And it was a holiday, and people would declare what they did, and it was a Sudat Mitzvah. And you can see it. It's in Safrut HaTanaim. And when Christianity started evolving, they realized that we need also something parallel to that, right? So Christmas became this holiday where you are kind of wishing a beginning of a good year and giving omens and doing all these stuff. And obviously, Christmas, like every holiday in America, became very secular and only about the external buying and acquiring gifts and giving gifts and making other people feel bad. And Santa, obviously, being the one we worship in order to receive free things. But it's a big cheshbon and nefesh. But going back to the Maharal.
Sorry about that.
It's fine. I got a letter for, I got an email from the mitzvah. They wanted to interview me about Halloween and Sukkot. And I was like, oh man, I hope nobody quoted me to the mitzvah about my Dvar Torah and my Sukkah on Halloween and Sukkot. So they're tov, nu, in achinami. Ending this first parak, ubeperek elo atrefot amar Rav Chisda, eize sone matanot ichye, ze hare trefa leatzmo. Velemala minetiva Torah perashnu ze. Right, a person is not allowed to say if this animal is trefa or not, if it's his animal. Why? Because he's never going to want to say that it's a trefa. He's always going to find a reasoning because it's his money and it's a lot of value. Who is a person who's sone matanot? A person who's willing to say this animal that belongs to me is a trefa. I know for sure. And devalue it by thousands of dollars. Right? Person has midata istapku, the person who's mistapik, who has enough. That's a person who doesn't need other people. And it doesn't become a relationship of mutual needs. Now we live in a world today where so much is mutual needs. Right? You scratch my back, I scratch your back. You like my post, I like your post. Vote for me, I'll vote for you. Right? There are no allies, they're just countries with mutual interests, right? And that's exactly why there are so many Jews that are lobbyists. Because let me just convince both sides that they have the same interest. Who's a Talmid Chacham? He constantly understands that he's a Talmid. Constantly trying to learn. A Talmid doesn't mean that I am your student necessarily, but I am a student. Who's a Talmid Chacham? A person who constantly understands that there's more to gain, and not a person who's just trying to show off with the knowledge he has. So the Maharal is ending Perek Aleph Netiva Osher with something very profound. After taking us through this journey of not chasing things, and through the journey of understanding that I should enjoy what I can, we're going to I despise receiving. Despise receiving. I want to live in a world where I barter, where I have what of my own to give in order for it to be mutual, or I actually worked for what I have and I grew it and I toiled with it. And I gave this example a few days ago, but I can in different chabura, but I can give it again. You buy a bag of apples from the store, you eat what you like, you throw away what you don't like. You go apple picking, you eat all the apples. Whether they are not so beautiful when they come home, but you pick them. You have a relationship with them. You twisted them off the tree. They're yours. You went out and got them. There's something very deep about having a relationship with things in this world. And we live in a world today where there's so much physicality, we lack relationship. Okay, I dropped it, I lost it, I had it, okay, whatever. But the true person is a person who's sone matana. I don't want things for free. Because freedom doesn't give me a relationship. Okay? And I remember that whenever my grandparents would give us money as a gift, my dad would make us write a thank you letter and explain what we got with it. Not only thank you letters at your bar mitzvah because, you know, your parents are telling you. But really, like, I don't want this to be for free. I want actually to have a relationship, and therefore I am going to share with you what this has and how this is very important. And often I would, years later, tell my grandparents, yeah, what do you mean? I got this with the money you gave me. Every time I wear this backpack, I remember you. And that's the relationship that exists. And not just like, okay, here, take this and do whatever you want with it and forget about it. And when is the next holiday coming up? And right? Or as the chevre who were teaching in Hebrew school, and they have to also teach about Halloween because it's a national holiday, they asked me what to teach. And I told them, Judaism and Christianity have two, both have a holiday where you dress up, and one you ask for gifts, and one you give gifts. It's a big difference. On Purim, it's all about giving. Halloween, it's all about taking. No wonder it's called Halloween. Shabbat shalom.